show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, if you have been watching Royals baseball lately, I feel bad for you, son, because they got 99 problems, and scoring runs is one of them. So they got that going for it. But before we get into that, introductions. Of course, I'm Jeff Hurt. With me, as always, is the man who never has a hard time scoring runs, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this tepidly summer evening?
You obviously never saw me play baseball when I was a teenager. Because
I've seen the pictures of the little the baseball cards, though. I have seen those.
Oh, I'm like eight in those. That was before I was good, and when I was good, I wasn't any good. So, yeah. There was one year in Little League, I was probably like 10 years old, it's first year of player pitch, and I got one hit, and it was in the last game of the year.
Nice.
A little dribbler down the right field line. I was like, all right, I got a hit. Yeah. So boom, that was the first year that player pitch was in play. So I was
the start of it all.
I was one of those kids that did not want to get hit by the ball, and so my swing was affected. I grew out of it, and I eventually got more than one hit once. So
yes, it's pretty cool. I too. I didn't start out with player pitch being afraid of the ball. I remember it, though. There was a kid that was on our team, right? And then he left our team and went to another one. I don't know what the circumstances were. I can't recall, or even if I knew at the time. But he pitched against us. And I think it just got in my head, seeing this kid that I knew was friends with from playing baseball, and he was pitching against me. And then after that, I was afraid of the ball for a long time, a couple seasons, and then I finally got over it. And started being able to hit again, and then decided I didn't want to play baseball anymore. So that was the
right.
End of that.
Yeah, it finally took one time my dad was throwing me batting practice, and I was like 11, and he just kind of hit me on the butt on purpose. It's like, that didn't hurt that bad, did it? And I'm like, no, I guess not. Well, there you go. I was like, okay, sure.
There it is.
So, you know, kind of worked out. Anyway. That's our baseball story.
There it is. That was story time for this evening.
Right.
So before we get into actual Royals baseball, we obviously have what's been kind of making the rounds as the biggest story of the week for Royals baseball. Danny Duffy on Sunday night at, I believe it was around 7:30, according to the reports, was caught driving under the influence. He had actually passed out in the Burger King drive-thru. If I were a lesser man, I'd make a joke about that being called the La Russa, but right. I'm not going to make that joke. So anyway, that was in poor taste. But it was Dayton Moore and Danny Duffy on Tuesday night after the news kind of broke and came out, had a press conference, and, you know, it was about what you would expect. You know, Danny Duffy himself was very contrite, very affected by what happened. You can definitely tell he's always a guy that wears his emotions on his sleeve, and it was very apparent that he was not very proud of what had occurred. And Dayton Moore had some very harsh words for him about what happened, as he should have. And it kind of brings up an important point. You know, we were kind of talking about this before the show, and, you know, kind of how to, you know, what we want to talk about. And it's always something where it's such a, you know, like I'm sure so many people have made mistakes in the past, and there's so many people that want to come out initially and try and defend, especially when it's your guy. You know, I mean, Danny Duffy, mm-hmm. you know, hashtag bury me a Royal and, you know, signed a huge contract in the off season. Like, it's been a long time since we've seen a very, you know, very good, prominent baseball player as attached to Kansas City as Danny Duffy is. And, you know, you could make an argument for Alex Gordon, but he's not nearly as outspoken as Duffy is. Gordon is, you know, Duffy has had his run-ins with Twitter and run-outs, right. if you will. But, you know, so, like, Alex Gordon's never been on Twitter, and he's not really active on the social media and isn't, like, kind of going out around town playing it up like, mm-hmm. you know, an Eric Hosmer or Moustakas or even a Danny Duffy. So, you know, while Gordon, we know he is committed to Kansas City and the Royals, it's not as evident and it's not as kind of forceful, if you will, as Duffy's has been. So he's endeared himself to the fans for that, and rightfully so. But, you know, unfortunately, and I think there's a lot of fans who maybe defend Danny Duffy in this situation, who, when it happens to other teams, whether it's Tony La Russa, whether it's Miguel Cabrera, whether it's, you know, whoever it may be, maybe they would attack those players and those teams and organizations for, you know, essentially putting up with that kind of behavior. And it's easy to do that. But then it's not so easy when the tables are turned and it's your guy and it's someone that you're a huge fan of, and now you have to come to grips with defending it to yourself as well as to other people of why it's okay. And you don't really need to. There's no defense for it. It's not okay. You know, mm-hmm. it's driving under the influence is not something that should be done. It was a bad decision. It was a poor decision. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to hate Danny Duffy now. It doesn't mean that he, you know, has to be off the team. You know, I mean, there are, I think the majority of jobs in this country, you know, if you have a problem, you know, it's not automatically fireable. You know, I mean, there's lots of jobs I've had where if you are, you know, deemed to have a drug issue or something like that, then, you know, they actually have it in their policies that they'll help you through these things. You know, so it's not always something that, you know, it doesn't have to be kind of the end of Danny Duffy, if you will. But, you know, it is something that he needs to be criticized for, and it's something that he needs to, you know, and he, I think, made the proper steps, at least in terms of how he spoke to the public about it, taking responsibility, taking the ownership of the action. But now he needs to be better. You know, I mean, there's one of the reasons Miguel Cabrera is so beloved now is he had his issues, and I think it was like, was it 09? When he had, because he had like two DUIs, and I think the most recent one was 09-ish.
I don't recall, but it wasn't too recently, but yeah, I mean, it's in that past, but yeah.
And he's had a long time in his career that he's been able to, you know, he's moved past that. He's obviously learned from it. He hasn't had the issue again, and he's become, you know, by all accounts, a better person on and off the field. So, you know, it's something that can be made up for. It's something that, you know, you can move past. You don't have to hate Danny Duffy now. You don't have to always hate him because of this. But he doesn't get a free pass just because he's Danny Duffy either. And it's, you know, it's just there's not a ton to say beyond just like it was dumb and it was a bad mistake, and he should be punished for it by however it ends up happening. And, you know, thankfully the worst thing that happened was, you know, he gets a ticket and he gets embarrassed in the public media, you know, whereas mm-hmm. we've had cases before with prominent athletes, Dante Stallworth in football, Leonard Little in football, people have died because they've made the same decision. And, you know, most paramount of all that should have been going through Danny Duffy's head is, of course, his teammate, Yordano Ventura, who took his own life by doing that in the off season. You know, it's like, it's really not, I don't know. It's hard to kind of really verbalize much more than just, you know, it was wrong or just and dumb and shouldn't have done it. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's I guess I'm trying to get to the point where, you know, it's you should be criticized for it. But, you know, it doesn't have to be something that completely changes how you view Danny Duffy. And you have to hate Danny Duffy now. Like, I think there's kind of both extremes in this scenario. You know, where you, at least in terms of public reaction to it, where some people have been, you know, say, oh, well, this is, you know, that's it. Like, I don't like Danny Duffy anymore and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, if you take a hardline stance on drinking and driving and that's how you feel about anyone that does it, then that's your prerogative. You know, that's no problem. Sure. But it's just a matter of, you know, feeling like you have to feel one way or the other. You know, it's you can still appreciate Danny Duffy as a player and as a person and realize that he made a very bad, possibly grave mistake that, you know, he needs to be held accountable for and needs to move past on his own. So, you know, it's – and while not directly correlating, you know, with the Chiefs, you look at like Tyreek Hill, someone who a lot of Chiefs fans have really liked, and his past issues did not occur with the Chiefs, you know, and his are, you know, his of domestic violence. And it's something where, you know, again, and I'm a firm believer in second chances. I think people can get better. I think they can improve. I think they can change. So, but they have to prove it. They have to show it, you know, and, mm-hmm. and so far in his tenure in Kansas City, Tyreek Hill has shown that. And it's up to Danny Duffy now to kind of show that he's improved and that he can move beyond making this bad decision that he's made and doesn't let it define him for the rest of his career, you know, because it's kind of up to him on that part. So mm-hmm. That was kind of a lot of rambling, but that's kind of my thoughts on it. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, you feel kind of similar, or you a little bit harder on him than me, or how do you feel about it?
I don't know. I mean, I was, one, very surprised because I don't remember if I'm thinking of a different player or something else, but I didn't even think he drank. So I was super surprised at that. And then as details came out, it was just like, you know, I was just kind of taken aback by it. You know, I think these situations are always tough as fans, just because, you know, we've talked to Danny Duffy a few times. We, you know, you can tell he's pretty genuine. He's sincere. He's a pretty good guy from everything that we can tell. That doesn't excuse this kind of an incident. It doesn't mean that you have to accept that it happened and talk your way into, you know, dismissing it and waving it off. It's a pretty significant thing. I mean, you think about, you know, Jose Fernandez and Carlos, or no, shoot, again, the Cardinals player.
Oscar Tavares.
Oscar Tavares. Why couldn't I think of that?
I think after this, when we were talking about it during the summer, I think the same thing happened to me when we were talking after Yordano Ventura, but, mm-hmm. but I couldn't think of his name either, so not sure why. But anyway,
I don't know. But, you know, those are two prominent incidents in the last couple of years where they were, you know, under the influence of something and they had accidents and it was, you know, the worst possible result. We haven't seen the report on Ventura. We don't, you know, I don't know if that was.
That's true. It hasn't been confirmed. That's true. I should have said that.
But it, I mean, you know, it is the kind of the first thing you think about with ball players and athletes like this, when this kind of thing happens is, oh, well, so yeah, I mean, he's fortunate that this is the worst that happened to him, that, you know, he goes through this embarrassment. My initial feeling was, you know, I was pretty angry about it. I was disappointed. I think I reached a point where I was like, well, but then, you know, you have to accept that these guys are human. They're going to make mistakes, but this is bigger than just any old mistake. This is, something that, you know, a lot of people get affected by.
Yeah, this isn't him flipping off a fan or something because he got angry in the moment. You know, right. That is just some throwaway kind of mistake. But this is quite a bit further than that.
Yeah, and so, you know, I kind of think back to some experiences that I've had where I had someone who they had made a bad decision to drive after they'd been drinking, and they got into an accident. Thankfully, they were not seriously injured. There was a scratch their foot. The airbag kind of gave them a bloody nose. That was it. I mean, thankfully they were wearing their seatbelt and nothing else happened, but you know, the car was totaled. And so the first thing, once I got to where the accident had happened, was making sure they were okay. You know, cause that's your initial response, is, are you okay? Is everything all right? And then once that happens, then it's like, you know, you think of all the things that could have happened, and that's where the anger and the disappointment really come through, and, you know, where you kind of recognize the gravity of it. And so that's kind of the same feelings that I had with this, where it's like, that's just so stupid. And the thing is, I think a lot of people probably have some kind of situation where they can look back and be like, yeah, I've probably done something very stupid in a similar vein before. You know, and you kind of have to recognize how dumb it was and you know, to just decide to not do that again. So, I mean, hopefully this is something that is completely isolated for Duffy. You know, hopefully it's a wake-up call that allows him to kind of redeem himself. He doesn't really have a whole lot of off-the-field incidents. So I think that helps with the perception of it, if that matters. And maybe that helps for whatever, you know, whatever help he needs to find to stay out of a similar situation. I don't know. There's a lot of details that just aren't out there. For as public as Duffy is sometimes, you know, these guys do have private lives. I don't know if there's something else happening. So I hope whatever he's going through that put him into this bad decision turns into something that at least, you know, he learns from, doesn't allow it to happen again. Maybe it's a lesson to other players on the team, in the organization, in the league, fans, to make that decision to be smarter in those kind of spots, and really give yourself to the opportunity to at least get some kind of lesson for yourself and for others. You know, give yourself the opportunity to find something positive out of what is a negative situation, you know, while still retaining the lesson, while, you know, being able to learn from it and everything. I think the Royals organization is the right place for that. That's probably also why Dayton Moore's words were so harsh, because Duffy is someone who's been in his organization for a long time. And, you know, they do kind of have a family atmosphere. And it was very much like a father scolding his son and being very upset, and with good reason. So, you know, hopefully Duffy takes those words to heart. I think he will. He's mature enough to kind of learn and grow from that. Going back to my other example, that person who was in the accident, there was kind of a, I guess, come to Jesus moment where some of us were talking with this person, and they did mature. They have stopped those kind of behaviors, and they've worked, put a lot more energy towards attaining different goals and making better decisions. And they did redeem themselves and come out of it, you know, kind of in a better spot. So hopefully that's what happens with Duffy. We'll find more info later. You know, obviously there's going to be legal issues and proceedings, but, you know, we'll find that out later as it goes on.
Yeah, I'm sure there's definitely more details, and, you know, if they come out or not, they'll probably come out, you know, kind of slowly over time, and we'll get a little bit more, better picture of what's going on. But hopefully, yep, if there is an issue with Duffy and he needs help, you know, the Royals are probably the best organization for him to be in, as they will definitely stick by him and help him get everything that he needs.
Yep.
So with that, we'll move on. I'd like to say we're moving on to happier topics, but if we're going to talk about the Royals' play on the field, I don't know that it's much more of a brighter spot, as the Royals' long national nightmare is over as of last night. But until that point, until the third inning, the Royals were sitting on 45. You heard that right. 4-5 consecutive innings of baseball completely scoreless for the Kansas City Royals. That's five entire baseball games that they did not score. That not actually five in a row, because it was carryover from the end of one and the beginning of another, but in the middle there was four entire baseball games where the Royals did not score a single run, including two 12-0 losses.
Yeah.
So they have – I mean, the last couple weeks, of course, typified by this past five games, has felt – I guess six games – has felt very 2005-ish for the Royals, in just that absolutely nothing is working. Every team that plays them has their best game, just can do whatever they want. Not even seems like they have to put in any effort. They're hitting home runs. They're getting base hits. They're knocking people in. They're scoring runs. Their pitchers don't have any difficulty striking them out, getting them out. I mean, it's been really, really bad. And the Royals have played themselves out of the division race and essentially out of playoff contention. They're currently sitting at 65-66 as we record this. They're three games out of the wild card. After just, you know, a few weeks ago being solidly in the – maybe about a month ago, solidly in the second wild card spot, and everyone seemed like they were just going to kind of cruise. After they had that nine-game winning streak, everyone kind of thought they were just going to cruise to at least get in this playoff spot and then making a run at the division – making Cleveland scared a little bit. They were a game and a half back at the point at their closest, and they just imploded. They've had all these things go wrong. And then to top it all off, in the midst of all this horrible, horrific non-scoring, they have found themselves with – we talked forever about these six games they had coming up against Cleveland, how that was going to make or break the division race. Well, it broke it hard. They went 1-5, which is, I mean, obviously the worst case scenario would be 0-6, but 1-5 is not that far behind. They're nine games behind Cleveland right now, and there is, I'm sorry, 9.5 games behind Cleveland.
No, there's even better.
Even better. There's essentially no hope for them to go for the division now, unless, you know, Cleveland implodes Royal
epic
style.
Epic collapse, yeah.
We're talking like Boston 2011 type implosion, which obviously has happened, can happen, but won't happen.
Right, probably bad odds on that.
I mean, the Royals have just been terrible. And the having resigned myself to the idea that there's likely no playoff scenario this season for the Royals, the one bright spot being the exorcism of the Balboni homer demon has come to a snail's pace. For three episodes now, we've been talking about – so my balloons are completely deflated.
Right, yeah.
They're just gone. And they're – Mike Moustakas is still stuck at 35 with Gary Gaetti, possibly forever, right. Who knows. But he's had some injury issues. He hasn't been playing as much lately, and it's starting to get me a little worried, Mike. I'm not going to lie to you. Again, bigger concerns a month, 6 weeks ago were, you know, whether the Royals were going to make the playoffs, win the division, who they were going to play, who they'd be up against, et cetera, et cetera. But having resigned myself to where they are, my biggest concern is Mike Moustakas has 31 games to hit two home runs, and I'm starting to wonder if it's going to happen or not. This is a lifetime of being a Royals fan, and this is what it does to you.
Right, because I mean, we figured 2 weeks ago that he was going to do it that night or the next day, and you know, we'd we'd miss it by timing our recording weirdly. And yeah, I mean, he's gone 11 games without a home run. His last home run was on August 15th. He's had, the Royals have had a couple of off days, and he's sat a couple of days because he has a little bit of soreness in his knee here and there. Long season, he had some issues after getting hit in the leg by Bruce Rondon a month ago, and it's just kind of a lingering issue. Mm-hmm. So he's two home runs off. And, it seems like two swings could do that, but it just hasn't happened yet. I'm not worried that he won't do it as long as he doesn't get injured. I keep having this recurring awful thought that someone's going to go up and in on him and break his hand, and he's going to get stuck at 35. So we're going to end up, basically, Royals don't make the playoffs. They don't sell off their players for good prospects. And they don't even get the home run record that should have been easily beat a week ago. And it's just like, oh, God, that would be, the worst thing. So, I don't know. I feel like he just missed a ball yesterday. He drove one fairly deep. It did end up in front of the warning track, but yeah, I think he's done this before where he's had a couple games where he didn't hit a homer, and then he went through a stretch where he would hit, four homers in seven games. And, maybe he's just working up to that next stretch. I also think maybe it's kind of a watched pot, never boiling situation. So I'm trying to not worry too much about it, just psychologically for my own health, so that I'm not thinking too much about, oh, God, he didn't hit a homer. Oh, no. But if he plays 25 of the next 31 games, which he probably would play a little bit more than that, especially if they DH him here and there, you're looking at, 100 at-bats. So that's pretty good odds for him to find at least one homer. Once he gets to 36, I think then maybe that makes people relax. And you kind of look at parallel to the scoring streak or the scoreless streak where they finally broke through with a home run by Whit Merrifield and went on to hit six runs. And they looked a lot better. It looked like they finally scored, and then they were able to kind of breathe a little bit and relax a little bit. I also get reminded of 2012 when Billy Butler was hitting a lot of home runs in late June and into July. And then he went through a stretch of 25, 30 games where he did not hit a homer. And he ended up sticking at 29. And it really felt like he would have had opportunity to maybe surpass Balboni that year. But he went through a month where he didn't do it. Moustakas, A, better power. B, he's right there. So I think he's definitely not in danger of missing out. But until he does it, I guess we have to continue to feed the stupid homer demon and doff our caps in its direction with the proper regard necessary for home run demons.
I suppose.
I guess, though, But when he hits 36, it's on. I have that feeling that it's going to be two homers in one game. He's just going to, get 36 and then later get 37. I don't know if that's just me with that kind of hunch feeling, but that just feels like how it's going to work to me.
Yeah, I could see that. It's very sad to to not have it done already. And as you said, we thought a long time ago that it would be done already, and it's not. Right. I could not imagine any more disappointing end to a season than seeing but we did talk in fairness, we did talk earlier about how we had kind of always imagined if it was broken that it would be you know, kind of late in the season, like, oh, is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? And the 37th home run would just be, you know, like the last week of the season or something. And we were convinced that, that Moose was going to blow past it well before then. But I don't know. At the pace he's currently on, perhaps we could be in for that type of a scenario, which would be really fun. But at the same time, I'd almost rather – I want him to break it.
Just get it done,
just get it done. So I won't say that I'd rather him have 40 because I don't know that – at this point, if you had asked me 2 weeks ago, I might have still said that. But I don't know that that's true anymore. Now that he's – now that it's in danger, just break it. Just get it there.
Yeah.
Let's make it 37 and be done with this thing.
But right.
Who knows? And then it'll be – then my daughter, when she grows up, will be talking – having a podcast with her friend about the Moustakas homer demon and how it's – it was broken in her when she was two – or not two, but year and a half. And here we are 30-some-odd years later. So
right.
One can only hope that that's the case. So – man, I just it should be done. It should be done.
It really should be. I think it'd be interesting because the Royals are at 160 home runs now. The team record for a single season is 168. Mm-hmm. It could very well happen that Moustakas' 37th could be the one that breaks the team record too. So he could break them both with one homer, which would be kind of cool.
37/169th home run.
Right.
Oh, man. That would be really cool.
That'd be pretty neat. You know, then it's like, okay, yeah, it was – he was just waiting for everybody else to catch up. But if he didn't, you know, if it was 161 and 162, I'd be fine with that too. And he should just do that, really.
I mean, yes.
Let's be honest. He should just do that today.
Yes, definitely. Today.
I'm not going to say by next time, next show, because I said that – two shows ago, and I said it last week. So this time next week, we will give you an update on his chase for the record.
Yes, we will. On
and
the chase.
We definitely will not celebrate his breaking the record because he will still be chasing it. Can you hear
that
me?
Is, home that, run is demon. Like, that is the most likely scenario.
Oh.
Such a reverent record. And its difficulty has enumerated the stars in its level of hardness. I don't know. I lost my poetic bone after that my poetic streak there. But in many ways, Mike Moustakas is a microcosm for everything that's happening to the Royals right now. So much promise, so much hope. For, you know, just a short time ago this season, whether it's a couple weeks or a month or so, and then it's all come crashing down to the point where we're just hoping to get there somehow by some miracle. And, you know, it's been interesting to see – I shouldn't say interesting – one thing that I think people kind of forget about, and I actually heard this on 810 this morning, where they were saying that there are seven pitchers right now from the Royals pitching staff that are on the disabled list.
Nope.
And when you think about it that way, it's like, man, that's no wonder.
That's more than half a staff, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, when you look at 2015 – you know, I mean, Jason Vargas got injured, but they went out and got Johnny Cueto.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, I think that was right around this. I can't remember if it was right before.
They were both in July.
Yeah, so I can't remember the exact timing of it, but but other than that, you know, that 2015 team really didn't have many injuries at all, let alone to the pitching staff. So the Royals this year have dealt with quite a bit, and. You know, it's unfortunate, and it's, you know, it's actually still, for as much heat, I think, as the Royals have kind of taken in terms of their development of the pitching, which is, and rightfully so, but it's also kind of a testament to what they've been able to do, not necessarily all in the terms of development, but just been able to find enough talent to field a somewhat competent pitching staff for most of the season. Because when you think about the fact that for that 2015 run, they traded five pitching prospects, all who either are currently or have spent some time in the majors since that trade, mm-hmm. and you know, all who probably could help this team right now, with the exception of maybe John Lamb, who
he's been hurt and just ineffective, and he's, yes. I think, currently suspended for something.
Yeah. So, but you know, pretty much any of the other pitchers, not necessarily setting the world on fire in and of themselves, but certainly could be helping this team right now.
You would live with the Sean Manaea, yes.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, not to misconstrue anything here, I'm not playing Monday. They shouldn't have made that trade. Absolutely should have made all the trades. Totally worth it.
Oh, yeah.
But my point is just being that, you know, since any of those pitchers would be most likely pitching on the staff right now, in some, whether it's a starter or a reliever, and they traded them away, the fact that they can trade those guys away who would have been helping the staff and have seven injuries, and they're still just a game below 500. I mean, I'm really reaching here for some silver lining, but at the same time, you know, it is kind of like, okay, you know, I mean, they're starting to show the wear and tear as yeah. the season has run on with the pitching staff. But, you know, they, for a while there, they really patched together a staff with, you know, tape and popsicles and, or popsicle sticks. And they were able mm-hmm. to make a brief glimpse at a playoff run. So, you know, it's kind of impressive. It's starting to fade away, starting to fall. And, right. you know, suppose we should have known it could only hold together for so long. I think we were all seeing through the blue tinted glasses, but, you know, it's when you get down to the point where you're looking at Jake Junis to save your season, and you're throwing Eric Skoglund out there, and mm-hmm. you know, these are trying times,
right?
And when that's kind of where your season rests, it kind of feels like it's already been written, if you know what I mean. So it's unfortunate to see the injuries kind of ravage the season, because you know, Nate Karns would look a lot better on this team right now. You know, I mean, if Danny Duffy hadn't missed all this, granted they were doing pretty well when Duffy was gone, but if he hadn't missed the time, you know, if Soria's not injured, Herrera's, I mean, you know, there's lots of different things that we can look at here, but you know, unfortunately that's where the Royals are. And it's, you know, the lack of offense, I don't know that it would have made my, I mean, when you lose 12-0, you score 8 runs,
right.
you still would have lost by 4. So, I mean, a good offensive production, you're still getting swamped. And when you have, you know, what was the game Skoglund started, what was the score after the first inning? I mean, 7 or 8-0 or something, right? I mean, he gave up 12 runs. And
yeah, it was like 12-0 after
yeah,
three
after
or
an
something.
Inning and a third. So, you know, and that's not to disparage Skoglund. He's a young kid, and he's just, it appears he's just not ready. But the, you know, when you're
that
in
game's
that
over,
yeah.
you're done.
I mean, you're like, not as a, you're just going
happen.
Through the motions.
Yeah.
So, no wonder Moustakas hadn't hit a home run. If you're down 12-0, you're probably not. I mean, the only thing you're probably looking for is to break that record at that point. But you know, you're probably not super keyed in when you know you're down 12-0 on the scoreboard. And oh man, I guess at least they weren't no hit in any of those games. I guess I don't know.
They got pretty dang close though. They had
two hits the other night. Yeah.
Both from Kane. So. Yeah, it's pretty bad when you get to the late August and your two most consistent starting pitchers are Jason Hammel and Jake Junis, and that's nothing against either of them. Junis has actually been really, really good since they called him back up. Like, I mean, his slider looks awesome. Like, it's got a ton of movement, and guys aren't picking it up. It's really cool to see, and it's nice to see that they kind of found this guy out of, you know, late draft pick kind of guy. Kind of guy that we've kind of hoped that they would develop and bring up in the past. You know, this guy who just comes out of nowhere that you don't really expect much from comes out and he can handle it. You know, he's putting on a pretty good audition for next year. But yeah, Skoglund has been rough. You know, Kennedy's been so bad. Vargas has been really bad in the second half. Mike Minor's been bad. Soria's been hurt. Herrera kind of dodged a bullet that, you know, his little forearm pain went away very quickly, and he actually looked really, really good last night closing that game out. But, you know, you've been stuck in this spot where you're kind of just hoping anybody can bridge the the late innings to get to Herrera, and Mike Minor's kind of done some, and he's faltered. Peter Moylan has been pretty good most of the time, but has his problems. Scott Alexander's been pretty good, but has his issues. Kevin McCarthy is surprisingly good. Brandon Maurer has not been good. Ryan Buchter's been okay. You know, but that's kind of what you're looking at. You're looking at that kind of group, and it's like that doesn't feel like any part of the bullpen from like 2015, which unfair standard, but at the same time, it's like, you know, it's what it was, and this is definitely not that kind of team. So yeah, those injuries really do hurt. And then Brian Flynn came up and was out just as quickly. You know, he got called up, made an appearance, left in the third inning of his appearance, and that was it. So he's on the DL, and Duffy's on the DL, and yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's no way to avoid the meltdowns from Kennedy and Vargas, but, you know, at least you've got somebody in that fifth spot if Carnes is still healthy or if Duffy is, you know, still healthy and everything. So, yeah, pitching's been rough. So a couple of those games, it wouldn't have mattered what the Royals would have done. They were still going to lose, and it's, yeah, it's pretty rough. And yet they're still only one game under 500. So go figure. I don't know.
Go figure. Yep. Yeah. And as we speak, they've already gone down in this game against the Rays. So, man, I almost just dropped a Devil Rays there. Every once in a while, it sneaks through. And I, man, I wish they would have kept, I wish they would still, they were still the Devil Rays. I don't know.
I don't have strong feelings one way or the other.
I'm understandable.
Glad, I'm glad they got rid of the dumb neon junk. I very, very much prefer their current color scheme and logos to the originals.
I would agree with that.
Those
for sure.
Those were terrible. I remember on MVP05, maybe even earlier than that, where you could play as the Rays, and yeah, was, I'm thinking probably earlier of like Triple Play 99 or something like that.
Oh yeah.
And it's just like those colors were so bad. It's just like this weird purpley, orangey, yellowy, just, it's awful. God, man. The 90s were so bad for logos and uniforms. Gross. Look at NBA.
They were pretty bad.
Anyway. Ugh. The Rockets, the Pistons. Anyway.
Oh, man.
Not what we're here for, but.
No.
Yeah.
The early 90s. 2000s had their moments. Diamondbacks. We were talking about that actually in the Slack chat a few days ago. The vest unis with God. The cutoff arms. The Royals had them. That was all the rage.
Every team had some early form 2000s. Of black in their uniforms, and it just looked awful for most of them. It's just like.
The trend, it's kind of weird. The trend went from the alternate black uniform that was just standard, like you said. And then it kind of shifted from there. And then it kind of in the mid to late 2000s into current day, it's been this huge focus on like the alternate color, you know, like when the Chicago Bears have orange jerseys or, you know, I mean, the Royals don't really have an alternate color. I guess you could say gold. But they don't have gold jerseys unless it's that future night, awful future night from, was that like 97?
I think they did it a couple of years, but yeah, it was like 96-ish, 97-ish.
The one that everyone remembers with like Sal Fasano.
God, those are so bad.
God, what a, I don't know, maybe just, I mean, Sal Fasano.
Sal Fasano.
He just cracks me up.
Just Google him. Look at the images. He's got.
Just Google him. Let's see. Sal Fasano. I bet you it's the future night is the first image that pops up.
I don't know. It probably auto completes to mustache.
Oh man, there's one. He's must be some sort of manager for the Lugnuts, a minor league team, I guess. So that's the first image that pops up. See how long you have to go down here before you find a decent ways before you find a.
He has a weird kind of cult following because he has that bulky handlebar mustache kind of thing happening. that he's kind of
a wonderful stash.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. It's you could put his photo in black and white or even sepia tone, and probably convince somebody that hey, he's from 1912.
You could.
His name's Sal. I mean, there's like 90% of players in the 19 teens were named Sal.
I typed in Sal Fasano sepia and nothing came up, unfortunately. But
well, that's a Photoshop project, I guess.
I know. That's something that we can easily remedy that scenario. But let's see. Sal Fasano Future Knight still doesn't get it. Let's see. Sal Fasano Royals Future Knight.
I know there's a Johnny
still
Damon
nothing.
Had a lot.
Still nothing. What if I just type in Royals Future Knight? Let's see.
That might do
Royals
something.
Future Knight. Okay, yep, there's a Johnny Damon one where he's doing like a flexing man pose or something.
Right, and weren't they all like cut off shirts too?
Yes, there it
God,
is.
God, that's the worst.
Found it. It was, it's like a North Carolina blue and then the gold helmet and jersey. The gold didn't even match. It was like it's like a bright yellow and then the helmet is like a gold chrome, like a Notre Dame helmet. Oh, man. This is the Mariners one isn't terrible. The pants are god awful. They look like football pants.
That's Mano the future. Pants.
What is this? What do you got here? Who's this one? I don't even know who this is.
I can't see right home.
Oh, it's not. There's one of Jeff Conine. Oh, they had the numbers on the helmets. I don't remember that part.
Huh. It makes me think of the Players' Weekend uniforms, which were really – I did not like those either.
Which just happened, yes.
Those were bad. They looked bad. And
yeah,
they should feel bad.
Yeah, they should feel bad. When I first heard of it, I just thought they were just going to put, like, new names on the normal jersey. Then I realized they were doing, you know –
like pajama tops or, like, yeah. These shirts that you would find at, like, an airport. But not the Kansas City airport. You would find that Royals jersey at, like, the – Wichita Airport or like the Tulsa Airport. You just why is that there? I don't know, but it's $12. Hey son, I got you a Royals jersey.
Here it is.
Who is Whitbird? I don't know, but it's $12.
Yeah, and it's cut off and
clean your room.
Yeah, Daddy missed you.
Let's go throw some BP. You're gonna get hit.
This is just – I'm having too much fun going through all these Royals – or all these old Royals photos. A lot of Johnny Damon and Future Knight jerseys. God, they were fucking –
That's the iconic one. That's the one people always point to is the Damon. Probably A, because it's Damon, and B, because, you know, it's prominently horrible uniform placement. So
I did find the Sal Fasano one I was thinking of, though.
All right.
It was in a UniWatch article. I am a huge fan of doing of teams stepping outside the box with the uniforms. I hate the fact that my three teams, essentially, Chiefs, Jayhawks, Royals, have never changed. They just have not changed in their entire history. You know, there was the big deal in 2008 when KU switched from the Trajan font, I believe is what it was called. With like the little points throughout the letters to the current kind of block letters, whatever they're called, font they have now.
Oh, they went the other way.
What?
They went the other way around to where now it is the Trajan font, whereas before it was the block.
Oh, okay. The new one is what?
I think it's called Trajan.
I can't. I guess I'm not sure which one's called Trajan, but they definitely had like the ones with the little points. Like that was like the Danny Manning era.
And oh yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So yeah. I guess I don't know what the fonts are called.
I'm thinking of the KU, the actual university logo. They did do a couple years ago in the Wiggins and Bede years. They did that kind of old 50s throwback.
Oh yeah, with
gray.
The cursive.
That was nice. Yeah, was and the, cool. the cream and blue. That was nice.
No, that was nice. Yeah, and they the football side they did like that powder blue.
Yeah, every football team, I think, has like seven different uniforms now every year, and I kind of hate that. It's like, just do one.
Yeah, part of the problem is that KU, for some reason, insists on being an Adidas school, and Adidas sucks at making jerseys. I'm sorry. I've never seen a cool Adidas. Like, they make some that are, like, cool enough, you know? But when you see, like, the really cool ones, it's always, like, Nike or Under Armour or something like that. You know, definitely not Adidas. Ugh. And there was that kid.
There goes our Adidas sponsorship.
Yeah, sorry, Adidas. There was that kid a few years ago who didn't go to Baylor because they were an Adidas school and didn't like Adidas uniforms.
Always a good reason to make your college always decision.
It sucks that they've essentially, all three of those teams that I root for, have not changed at all.
Yeah.
Whereas you look at, you know, look at the Diamondbacks, how many iterations have they gone through? We already talked about the Rays and how they've changed. I mean, you think about
Well, like the Chargers in the NFL, where they did the throwback, and then they went into that kind of they've got the powder blue back and the white helmets, and now that's like their base.
Yeah,
and that's great. It looks awesome. It looks fantastic.
Because they had the full throwback, and they had the current, and then they kind of meshed them.
Yeah,
and then they had, and that's how they got, or not the current, but they had those kind of the darker blue, navy with the that were kind of ugly. And they kind of meshed that style with the powder blue, which was cool. So, you know, just – and my dad had told me that because a friend of his used to work for the Chiefs, and he said Nike would approach them – or sorry, Reebok – this was back when Reebok was making all the NFL uniforms – would approach them every year with new styles, new color tones, new everything to kind of revamp the Chiefs logo and everything. And they said no. We didn't want to look at
it.
Nope. Even something like San Francisco and Philadelphia, you know, like they haven't gone through major changes, but like they've made the logo sleeker and they've kind of changed the color tones and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, like a deeper green for Philadelphia.
Yeah, absolutely. And they kind of changed the way the wings look on the helmets and mm-hmm. Nothing for the road. The Falcons, they did the red back in the 80s and 90s, and then they dropped it, and it was all black, and they brought the red back.
Yep.
I don't know. We're rambling now, I guess. When the Royals don't score runs for 45 straight innings.
This is what happens.
This is what happens. We start talking about Atlanta Falcons and San Diego Chargers jerseys on the Royals podcast.
Only thing would be like Royals going full powder blue. Road uties, though.
Yes.
Because that's what it always was. Like, they didn't road grays. They did road powder blue up until, like, what, 91, but I want to say?
Even that was an era when everyone had the powder blues.
Yeah.
Remember, there was, like, the Phillies had a powder blue. The Cardinals had a powder blue. Like, what the hell are you having a powder blue jersey? It's not
even
a color.
You're the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Your name is literally a synonym for red.
Your minor league team are called the Red Birds. Like, that's your thing. And you're just going against it. It'd be like if the Royals just wore a green jersey.
Right.
What the hell is that?
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Or a red one to be the exact opposite.
Right.
Like, oh, hey, we're the Red Royals now. So that's cool. But
Anyway,
the Red Royals made me think of the Red Wedding, which made me think of Game of Thrones, which made me sad because we are did you watch the finale?
Oh, yeah.
Twice. Spoiler alert. So,
it was awesome.
You're aware of my obsession with Funko Pops, correct? I've told you this. We talked about this.
Yeah, I know of this. Yes.
Okay. So, I just saw there was a tweet. You see, I
saw your tweet.
I was pretty busy today, but I happened to catch it when I was looking at my phone, and so I retweeted it. And
again, spoiler alert.
Yes, spoiler alert. But because I have one of Daenerys riding Drogon.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I have that Funko Pop set, which is super cool. And it's on my shelf at work. And then this one is the Night King riding formerly Viserion. I don't know what he calls him now, but probably something with a grunt, I would assume. the Ice Dragon.
Shrieking ice.
Interestingly enough, I found this out. So apparently in one of the – not even in the actual Game of Thrones books, but in the like compendium pieces, like support pieces of the books,
uh-huh.
there is ice dragons
yep.
are actually different than dragons. Like, not even to say that it's a like White Walker dragon like we've seen,
mm-hmm.
right? But like ice dragons was like a completely different thing.
Yeah.
So you knew about this?
I didn't know about this. Seen stuff about this, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I had no idea. So that's kind of cool. But, I mean, they're obviously not going to put that in the show at this point. But that's kind of I had no idea. Kind of like the ancient giants, which are different than the giants that we did see in the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which there are also zombie White Walker giants.
Yeah, so a lot of them. Actually,
a lot of them, yes, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I also have a Woon Woon Funko Pop, in case you were curious.
Sweet.
Got that one.
I retweet those all the time, hoping to win something, but I'm never going to win anything. But
I know. Damn it. I never win any of those. There's always like 10,000 retweets.
Right.
And I'm never
My odds win. Are not good.
No, they're not. But I'm going to find out when that pop is released, and it will be mine.
It I needs to be you. If you've got the other one.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then I can like have them facing each other and it'll be awesome.
Sure. Absolutely.
Pretty excited about it. More excited about that right now than I am about Royals baseball, even though as we speak, Whit Merrifield just hit a home run.
That's number 17.
I got excited when I saw home run, but it was Whit Merrifield.
That's 161.
There it is. Keeps ticking up. 17 for Whit Merrifield. That's
17. Would not have guessed that.
No, definitely not. I mean,
the Royals
Whit Merrifield
six
is just
players.
Tied.
Six players with 16 or more homers this year, which is the first time since 1977 that the Royals have done that.
Which was the year they won 102 games, which will not happen this year.
Will not, no. No, they could go lossless and they would not do that.
Yes. Did Lorenzo Cain, did he hit 16 or 17 home runs in 15?
16.
16. So Whit Merrifield has more home runs. His career high is now higher than Lorenzo Cain's. Because how many does Lorenzo Cain have this year? Like 13?
Yeah.
So would you have thought that by the time Lorenzo Cain's career was done, that Whit Merrifield would have more single-season home runs than he did? I did not think that.
I would not, no. Not after Whit hit, what, 6 last year?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Pretty crazy. I mean, we talked about that before the season started, that there would be maybe a bunch of guys who could hit 20. We kind of had Jorge Soler in that mix, but that Merrifield and Jorge Bonifacio kind of fit into that instead.
Yep.
So go figure. Can't predict ball.
Yeah. No, you can't.
At all.
Speaking of home runs, not Royals related, but pretty funny. I saw from Giancarlo Stanton the other day that because his big thing is he's marching towards 60 home runs possibly this season,
mm-hmm.
with, but like he's, I guess I don't really follow it closely enough to know if it's him necessarily or kind of like the Marlins and the Miami media, but essentially pitching it as a no asterisk 60 home runs, as in like not abated by, you know, PEDS or whatever, which is dumb in and of itself, but it's pretty funny that there are some camps that are trying to pitch it this way. And then I hear from Stanton, one of the quote, he said that he credits Barry Bonds with helping him in his home run surge. It's like, what kind of help was Barry Bonds giving you exactly? I'm not pointing any fingers here.
Right.
I'm
he was
saying.
Their hitting coach last year.
Yes.
But he said, not this year.
But he said he credits him. So what exactly kind of help is he getting?
Yeah. I don't know. That guy's impressive. So,
yes, he is. He is that was just kind of a fun little joke I had. But Giancarlo Stanton, please don't hurt me if you're listening to this, Mr. Stanton. I apologize.
Right.
He is a bad man, and he is. Yeah, he's probably going to hit 60. Probably going to hit 70 at this point. Who knows? He's got 30 games
might.
Left. He can hit 90. I don't know.
He hit like 25 in like 31 games. So
no, it's absurd. It's absurd.
That is crazy.
Just as absurd as Mike Moustakas not having broken Steve Baboni's record. But I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. I'm flabbergasted.
We should probably finish.
That's, yeah, I'm thinking that as well. So
if they stuck with us this long.
Yeah, if you're still here, then we're about to leave. So thanks for sticking with us through the uniform talk. Turn out the lights. Turn out the lights when you leave. Thanks for sticking with us to the uniform talk and the Game of Thrones spoilers. I apologize if we spoiled it for you, but give it the program.
It was a weird week.
Yes, it was a weird week. Today was a long day for me, man. Holy cow, it's a long day. But anyway, we're going to wrap up there for your benefit. We could probably keep going, but we'll end it for you guys. We'll be back next week with our update on the chase for the Balboni record. Who knows where Indeed. We'll be? I make no predictions about this for any Homer demons who are listening to this podcast. There are no predictions about where we'll be. But we will give an update on where we are at that time, 1 week Correct. From today. So be sure to tune in for that. Keep watching those Royals. It's, you know, we can – while most hope for most of the good things are probably gone, you know, this is the last time we're going to see a lot of these players, the Royals, in the Royals uniforms. So let's enjoy it, you know, even though the season – likely won't end up where we wanted it to. There can still be some fun, and there can still be some good times to be had. A lot of great memories from this organization, or for this organization, from those players. So let's enjoy these last 30 games as fans, last 31 games as fans with these guys, and hope we get a couple records to fall in the meantime. And we'll be here with you to celebrate any that may or may not fall. Who knows?
Right.
But we'll be here right with you for the rest of the season and off season, of course, because that's what we do. So with that, we'll leave you. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to visit our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn, and you know, to go along with our topic that we at the top of the show. When you do go to Kelly's Westport Inn, we don't say it enough, and we should. Please be responsible. It's, you know, Kelly's has lots of options. They will help you if you need a ride home, you need to find something. You know, they can help you. Don't make a poor decision like Danny Duffy did. You can, you know, be responsible. We love you all as listeners and as people. We want you to exist and to be able to listen to this podcast for a long, long, long time. As long as we plan on doing it. And the best way to do that is to be safe and be responsible. And then when you do something like go out and have a good time at Kelly's, which is always a good time. So be sure to visit. But again, be responsible, be cognizant, and don't do anything dumb that could harm yourself or other people. So visit Kelly's. Visit BP Kansas City. A lot of good stuff has gone up there. We had I didn't have a chance to read it, but Craig had an article today that kind of outlined some of the stuff we're talking about, just kind of the situation for the Royals. I'll probably read that tonight. So definitely go on BP Kansas City.
Yep.
Check that out.
Clint's doing some end of year minor league review. So that's definitely good stuff.
Names that you're going to start hearing a lot more of starting in the off season as we head into next season. So, you know, brush up on your minor league knowledge for the Royals, and Clint's the best hands down in terms of the Royals blogosphere. Clint is the best place to go for that information. I'm biased, but I'm also right. So,
right.
what are you going to say?
It's true.
There it is. So be sure to go, read his stuff, read all the stuff we got on there. As we move forward through this Royals season, kind of got that senior year season, if you will. But we'll leave you there for the night and or morning, evening, afternoon, whenever you're listening to the show. So be sure to come back next week. We'll see you then. Thank you all so much for listening. We love you all. We'll see you next time. Until then, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.